Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy. I host the show, and today I have a great guest. He is actually from another country, so, you know, we might have a little connection problems, but if we do, hang in there. So, Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Hi, Nancy. Thanks very much for inviting me on.
You're very welcome, Jonathan. It's my pleasure actually having you on. I was looking a little bit about your bio, so what I would like to do first, Jonathan, is have you explain to the listeners kind of like what you do, and then we'll talk about your book and how it was written, okay?
Okay.
So let's talk
okay, well, I'm what I call a mystic guide. I'm somebody who provides people with an experience of something beyond themselves. And that experience has been brought to me, that awakening has been brought to me through a revelation of many different experiences. I've experienced psychic skills, mediumistic skills, channeling, and I just kept on going and kept wanting to learn more. And eventually I led myself to a sense of understanding the source, or God, if you like, whatever phrase you would like to use. And I have a willingness and awareness to share that with other people. So at the moment I work in a center that we started in southern France called the Dubon Center. And we basically do workshops and talks from the center, and people come from all over the world to come and stay and deepen their awareness, receive healings, all kinds of things. So it's a very varied existence at the moment for us.
That sounds great, Jonathan. Now, you talk about mystical and you talk about psychic. Are they one of the same, or are there a difference?
Well, I just think, Nancy, my impression of that is that they're all different states of awareness. Everything has a whole unit. There is a oneness in all existence, but psychic awareness is manifested differently from, for example, mediumship to me.
Mm-hmm.
A psychic and a medium have different qualities and different awareness. And so a channel has a different job, if you like, a different awareness. We all operate, as you do and many others, on different frequencies of awareness and understanding. And that's what we share with other people in our work. So it's really, nobody's better or worse, but everybody has a function. And it's sharing that function, which is our role.
And I agree 100% with that, Jonathan. Do you think that if somebody can do psychic stuff, or, as you say, mystical, that they can also easily learn how to do the channeling or the mediumship?
I don't think it's an easy thing necessarily, but I think if you need to do it, Nancy, I obviously needed to do it for some reason. I don't think everybody needs to do all these things. We've kind of all had different experiences in this life or maybe in another existence, or we're somehow aware of how that consciousness functions, so we don't necessarily need to repeat things over and over again. But for some people, like myself, I had to experience many of those things to really understand them in this life. For some people, they may not need to experience channeling at all. They may just need to experience a life of experiencing love and sharing love with another person. It doesn't really matter what it is, but the fact that you have some awareness of what your life is, the meaning of your life, I think that's the most important thing, and what satisfaction you get from your life, and how that shapes the positive feelings for other people.
Okay. Do you remember, Jonathan, when you started to have your awakening? Did it happen when you were a child? Did it happen later?
Yeah, I was kind of a late bloomer, I suppose, and I used to think that I didn't really have any experiences as a child, but the more aware and the more understanding I gained, I was able to see that I really had had these experiences all my life. And I do believe everybody else has had them as well. You know, they're not something that comes and goes necessarily. We just don't always notice their existence. So for me, it was, I think, the I had sort of flashes in the sort of mid-90s of strange experiences of awareness of things that were going to happen or being able to tell people things without any experience or understanding of what I was doing. And then eventually we moved into sort of 2001, 2002, and I was having dinner with some friends, my wife and some friends, one evening, and right in the middle of dinner, I fell into trance and started channeling and gave mediumistic evidence. And so that really obviously shook me up and gave me the sort of kick up the backside, if you like, to look at it further. I'd kind of ignored it for a few years and just looked at it as something a bit strange. And so eventually it just came up and kicked me and reminded me to look at it a bit more carefully and to study it and to understand what it was and what its use was. So I kind of had a baptism of fire to some degree because I didn't know anything about channeling, mediumship or anything. I was just really a free spirit and enjoying our life in France. And so, yeah, it was a bit of an unexpected experience.
When you were at dinner with your wife and friends and that started to happen to you and you finally stopped the channeling, what did they say?
Well,
that's
very often the question people ask. They actually kept quite sane and normal, and we had one of our friends with us that evening, very, very fortunately, or probably the way it was meant to be, who had seen those kind of things before. So he was able to explain to me what was going on, because I really had no idea. So he encouraged me to relax and go into it, as simple as that. And by doing that, we were able to really, really go into it and go into using a guide at that point. Somebody came through, a consciousness came through me, and we talked about many things, and a great deal about what's happening in the world now in the 2008-2012 timeline as something that's a window of immense change, I think, for the whole world, for sure, for America, for England, for France, for Africa, for the whole world. So it was, again, you know, learning about why that information was coming and who to share it with and how to explain it.
A lot of times when people talk about what they've gone through, like when I'm doing my readings and stuff, things just come, and you know, people say, well, where does it come from? It's like, well, I don't know. I just stay open, and it just comes, you know, and I'm not really a channeler. You know, I don't channel, really. But every now and then, whether you really want to do it or not, it just happens. So, and I agree, if you just stay open and relaxed, you're going to get a much better, you know, information from it. And not fighting it is going to make it a lot clearer for you in your own mind anyway. Now, you
Absolutely.
Predicted a few things, Jonathan, and I have to ask you about them because I like when people do predictions. And if you don't want to answer them, it's okay. But back in 1997, you were talking about back in 1997, and you actually predicted that somebody in the British royal family would be killed or assassinated. And that was 4 days
That's
just
right.
before Princess Diana died. Okay?
That's
and
right,
do,
yeah.
Do you think, and again, you don't have to answer this if you don't want to, do you think, because this is still the questions going on, that it was really an accident or was it a planned event?
Okay. I'm gonna use something that I know to get out of that question, answering that question, because I will just put it to you, Nancy, that I know Princess Di wrote a letter, and I think you probably know about that in the States, in her own handwriting. It's clearly her own letter that describes some weeks or months before she died in this car accident, saying that she was very concerned that people or the hierarchy might want to get rid of her, might want to take her life and, for example, use a setup of a car crash to take her life. So I would just say, you know, can we not look at her evidence from her own self? She had suspicions and gut feelings and psychic awareness that somebody was, you know, after her, if you like. Somebody wanted to change her life and even take her life away. So... I don't know for fully, because obviously I can't honestly say to you in my full understanding what the exact facts are. But I think there's no smoke without fire. And I definitely got that very, very powerful message, which in the words it came through, it did feel like there was a threat. It was a threatening thing. So that's really all I can say.
Now, you've also did a prediction, which everybody here in the United States is a little curious about, okay? And again, if you don't want to answer it, it's all right. But in 2002, you actually had a vision that Hillary was giving her speech after accepting to be the first female president of the United States for 2008.
So, that's right. Literally, a vision came to me. I was literally taken into this site. And I'm not a political person at all, so please don't think that I am. But I literally had this vision of Hillary Clinton at the time, and I really don't know a lot about American politics either, so that's another important point. And I had a vision of Hillary on the rostrum making what I understood to be a victory speech. The interesting thing was the colors black and gold or yellow and black were very prominent, and she was giving a speech that was a victory speech in my understanding. And when I saw that vision, I was a bit taken aback because I didn't really understand it, but I felt it had something to do with the 2008 to 2012 window. So I kind of put two and two together, but also tried to feel the sense of what I was seeing, and I felt that that was 2008-2009, and obviously that ties in with now your election process in the States. And also I think there's a very powerful link with Hillary Clinton in 2008-2012. So that's really all I can tell you. I don't have first-hand experience, but I understand that to be truth as I understand it in my awareness. The exact ins and outs of it I cannot give you. I can just tell you what I experienced.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now, Jonathan, is there an email address and a website that you can give out to listeners in case they'd like to get a hold of you?
Yeah, sure. We've got the center in France. I mean, we have people now coming over from all over the world. We've got two or three people coming next month from the States. So if you're interested to have a look at the center, you can go to www.dubon, which is dubon.org. If you're interested in the book, which I'm sure we'll get on to in a minute, that's www.we-r-all-1.net, and that's the middle dash or the sixth dash on the keyboard. And if you want to email us at all, it's dubon@nerf, which is neuf.fr.
Okay. We'll give that out again before we go off air. And, yes, I'd actually like to get into your book. And the name of your book is We Are All One, and then A Call to Spiritual Uprising. So let's talk a little bit about the book. One, how you got the title, and how the book was written, basically.
Okay. Well, the title really came with the book, which, again, was another unexpected event. I didn't sit down to write a book. I never planned to write a book. I've never written a book. It's not actually something I necessarily wanted to do, although probably at some level I must have wanted to do it, because I did it. But I suppose in spring last year, I had what you would call a near-death experience, basically. And again, I was sat with my wife. She's put up with a lot, hasn't she? I sat one evening with my wife, and we'd had dinner, and the kids were in bed, and we were just relaxing, and I started to feel a bit strange. A bit uneasy and a bit uncomfortable. And so I got up out of the chair because I was feeling queasy, and after a few seconds I fell down to the floor. And as I remember as best I can, Wendy, my wife, was with me and obviously very anxious about what was going on, and I tried to comfort her in that position, telling her I was okay because I didn't obviously want her to worry. She wanted to get an ambulance, but I said, no, don't worry, please, you know, let's just sit here and just just try and keep calm and find out what's going on. So I was kind of trying to, like, keep her calm, but obviously I didn't know what was coming, and then I began to slip away, I think was probably the best expression. I was starting to lose the connection with my body, and I was feeling this happening. So I really didn't know what to say. I thought, I don't know what I should say to my wife, because this might be it. I was starting to feel that I was going and that death was imminent. So the only thing I could think of saying to her was sorry, because I felt embarrassed that she'd have to deal with me if my body was lying on the floor. I'm a lot bigger than her, and she'd probably struggle to deal with that situation. And obviously anything, I wanted to leave this world with a clear conscience. Not that I haven't got a clear conscience, but to feel comfortable. I can't really explain it, but I think to say sorry was just that thing I spurted out. And then I began to move out of the crown of my head and literally was watching my wife and my body on the floor. And of course, when this first happened, in the real sense, it wasn't like a guided meditation or, you know, an astral movement. It was an actual, my full consciousness moved out of my body, and I was looking at my body. So I think initially I did panic, but immediately I panicked. I just became very, very peaceful, as if panic didn't exist. And I was able to begin to understand what was going on. I knew I was in the process of dying and that I was experiencing my soul leave my body, if you like. And so this went on for 10 or 15 minutes of watching my wife, and my wife was getting more and more anxious and upset and in tears, etc. And I was able to look at her at one point. And obviously she was distraught, but I could also sense the energy of her thoughts. And she obviously had this anxious feeling about the situation, but also about the continuation of life without me, with the two children, for her and as a family. And immediately I received that thought. I was pulled back into my body by what felt like a magnetic force. It kind of just clicked, and I went back into my body, and I came back into my body. And then, so many, many things happened that evening. We had a lot of, again, channeling type of experiences, because it was a very elevated state that obviously I was in and Wendy became as well. And that went on for 2 or 3 hours that evening, because we couldn't just switch off. And after a day or two, things calmed down, and I literally wrote the book. And I didn't plan to write the book. I just took notes, if you like, because my old process of thought had become overridden by a deeper understanding of consciousness. And really, that's how the book came about.
That's pretty amazing, actually. when you were writing the book, you made a statement that you really didn't, you know, choose the words chose you.
Yeah.
So in the process of writing, I would tend to think that you were probably, at the whole entire time that you were doing the book, at a very heightened state of possibly channeling. Would you say that's kind of a fair assumption?
Okay, I think it went beyond the channeling as such. In other words, I think when you're channeling, you're aware of using or being used by, in agreement, another consciousness of a separate identity. In the case of the book, I can only explain it as being a separate consciousness, but yet the same identity. And that also that consciousness to be also yours and everybody else's absolute higher consciousness.
Okay. Like when I did my book, and I'm like you, I didn't really want to write the book. I wrote my autobiography. And I'm not good with a computer. I can lock them up in just no time. But the first night that I sat down to start writing this book that I didn't want to write, but I was being bugged on a constant basis every night, every day, being downloaded in my mind, I sat down at 10 o'clock at night, and the next time I looked at the clock was 5 a.m. in the morning, and I had written all kinds of stuff. I had no idea what I wrote. and I didn't read it either.
And that's beautiful, though, isn't it?
It was. It was, like, really easy. I thought, well, hey, if it's going to be this easy, then you just keep giving me what I need, and I'll just do this book, and I'll be done with it. You know, that was my thought. And really, that's how my book was written. And a lot of people, mm-hmm. you know, I don't, now I do, but when I first did it, I didn't say anything that that's how it was written, because a lot of times people look at you and go, yeah, she's just kind of weird or she's kind of strange. But really, it does work like that. It's not that you're choosing everything that's coming through. It just comes through.
Absolutely.
So how long?
My understanding of the book for me, Nancy, was that I really didn't have my identity in it, because I didn't see my identity as being important. Me, Jonathan, was kind of irrelevant. I was just part of something that was transcribing notes. And so that's why it's a very weird situation now, and I'm sure it's the same for you. I have people giving reviews on the book. You get a fantastic review, and you still can't really accept it because it's not yours. I don't own it. I don't own the book. It's a very bizarre experience. I'm
right.
just sharing that experience of higher consciousness with everybody. I don't own
yeah.
the book. I feel it's part of everybody because I feel it's a very pure essence that it comes from.
Yeah, and what I found out from my book, I mean, I wrote the book about my life, obviously, and what it was is being a psychic and how I grew up, actually being raised by angels, because that's how I really interpret I was raised. But, and I'm like you, people said, man, this is a great book, and I thought, well, it's just about my life. And I still, to this day, believe it or not, have not read my whole book. But I had to put pictures in there, so wherever I had to put pictures, I would read that part, and I thought, that sounds pretty good. But my book turned out to be a self-help book, using my life as a way to do it and get through today's world. So it's kind of a neat book, I think. At least that's what I've been told. So it's kind of interesting that, you know, some of the same things that I feel that I'm going through with the book is exactly what you've experienced too. And I would think a lot of people who have written a book under that circumstance or that condition would probably feel the same way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, you said it took you about 6 days to write your book.
That's right.
So in that 6 days, go ahead.
Sorry, go on, you ask.
In that 6 days, again, I would think that you were at a very heightened level, you know, and so can you maybe explain to the listeners during those 6 days, what kind of feelings did you have or what kind of senses did you feel, or can you give them some kind of insight about what you went through for those 6 days?
Yeah, sure. Well, my understanding of it, and the best way I can explain it, is that in those 6 days particularly, but for several weeks after that as well, I connected with the purest comprehension of consciousness, and I was able to write down the words that came through. So I didn't choose to write the words, as I said to you, I just wrote. And the book was written not for the purpose of getting money and becoming famous, but to share the experience of consciousness so that people that read the book could learn from it. So from my experience, I glimpsed, if you like, my fully conscious state of being, which I believe is the same as anybody else's. I glimpsed the spiritual part of the human being without the mind and the body being involved. And that went on for several weeks and then started to wane and started to come back down slightly. But, of course, the experience stays with you, and as you begin to understand the experience more, the more resonance it has within you and the more resonance you can pass to other people.
And that, again, I think is very true. Jonathan, this is going to be kind of a weird question, but and I have to ask because a lot of people ask me some kind of a question like this, but I'd like to hear from you too. When people, you know, hear us talk, they do a couple things. They go, if they're into the metaphysical world and have some knowledge, they go, now that's really neat and that's really cool. The people who are not quite sure of what we may be saying or how we may be getting our information, they have a tendency to kind of doubt it or try to tell us that we're a little different or a little strange. Has anybody, mm-hmm. you know, come up and, you know, said those kind of things to you or, you know, again, ask, you know, why you think that you've been the one who's chosen to send out the message?
Yeah, it's a difficult one, because if people come up and are talking about the book and say, the book you wrote, your book, my deepest understanding of that is that we all wrote the book, because it's a pure consciousness thing. It's not about an identity of an individual. It's about a mass consciousness, a spiritual consciousness. So that is complicated in itself. But of course there are going to be doubters with any experience. And as I said on, I was interviewed the other day, I said, you know, when Columbus set off on the boat at the end of the 15th century to go around the world and explore the world and find the new world, if you like, there were people on that ship that really honestly thought they would fall off the other side of the world, because they hadn't experienced it and they didn't have enough knowledge or sense of it being true that there was a sea that touched other lands and a new world. I consider it the same experience. I don't have any judgment of those people. I just understand their awareness as being different to mine today. But their highest awareness is exactly the same as mine. So their mind will be different, their body will be different, but their highest understanding of spirit, when you reach it, will be exactly the same. Because, like my book says, we are all one. The spiritual consciousness in its purest state is a unified state. That's why they call it unity consciousness, oneness, non-duality. They are undividable and absolutely in line with each other. So there is no separation. But of course in the world we live, there is separation. We see separation in our daily lives. And it's a matter of awareness and understanding and experiencing something that creates unity that allows you to see and share that understanding with others. You can't convince everybody, and not everybody needs convincing today. You just convince the people that ask to be convinced.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how I look at it. It's like I don't really argue with anybody. You know, I answer them the best I can. And then after I do that, it's like, you know, it's now your choice. You can take it for what it's worth, or you can just discard it, you know. And I let them make their choice. Jonathan, you talk about the timeline of 2008 to 2012. And I've been told as a child from 2010 on there was going to be some major, major changes going on. So without giving away your book or most of your book or whatever, can you explain maybe to the listeners a little bit of what in your, you know, your knowledge, your visions, your understanding that you tend to see happening around the world? Because it's not just happening in any one place.
Okay, I just think I can put it down to, in one way, we can look at it as an evolution, the evolution of human beings. So it took time for humanity to experience the body as we developed, as a human being arrived on the planet. And it took time to experience the mind and all the fantastic creations that are still going on. And now we're in a stage where we're beginning to experience the spirit of man. We're in a time where we're experiencing the spiritual aspect of man. And by experiencing the spiritual aspect of humanity, we can actually shape and create a world of peace and harmony. So the old adage of heaven on earth is a distinct possibility, if you choose. It's a choice, and we all have free will. But 2008, for me, there's a distinct kick-in now in an energetic way, building up to 2012. And I see that as an opportunity for consciousness, but mass consciousness, to change. A time when conscious evolution will definitely gain momentum due to occurrences, we could say, that could be said to be good or bad, but really are just occurrences. There is no good or bad. They're just happenings that need to occur. Because there is an underlying intelligence which leads our lives. And day to day, throughout the world, more people are making life-changing decisions based on heartfelt feelings and their senses, their higher senses, rather than a logical deduction. And this is what I call the weight of perception, the movement of consciousness, the uprising of awareness, the movement of human consciousness to reveal more, to understand what we truly are and what we can truly become. And 2008 to 2012 is that window, that portal, that possible time of change where we decide to a greater extent what we want to become and what sort of world we want to leave for our children.
Do you think the children of today, and again, you don't have to answer this, okay? Do you think the children of today that are coming into this world on a steady basis have got more of the spiritual intelligence, or at least are more aware of their spiritual intelligence than, say, the children that came in, you know, 30, 40 years ago?
Okay. Well, I can see two sides to that, Nancy. The one side, there's an incredible amount of information available, isn't there? If you look at the internet, our books or whatever, television programs, the Indigo Child stuff, all that kind of, there's an incredible amount of information which another generation would never have had, access to. So they have an incredible opportunity in terms of information for a start. And I think with a evolving being and an evolving race that we are, obviously some of those, the information picked up by the previous generation is passed on automatically anyway. So there is a kind of ongoing evolving link. And I know people say there are different times and special children, blah, blah, blah. That's fine. I can go with that. But what I would say is, in the negative side of that, if you want to call it that, the modern world, which is so based on commercial aspects and matter and owning and being seen to be this or that, has actually lost a lot of the sacred, has actually lost the concept of God or source or whatever you would like to call it. And I think that is a struggle for people growing up in the world. They have a lot of information and a lot of potential, but I think there is a lack of focus because that is not installed in the fabric of our society strongly enough. So I think the sacred aspect that is a natural part of being a human being is somewhat been lost, and coincidentally, we're seeing a change and a reaction in the world today. And with young people growing up, they're going to have the possibility to achieve enormous things. But we need to understand the identity of the human being, the fact that we have a body, a mind, and a spirit. We're not just all body and mind. It's not just about fast cars and nightclubs. It's about other things as well. And I know the time for all these things, but it's important to be reminded and remember that divine link. And I think that's a big part of it, remembering who and what we truly are.
And again, I tend to agree with a lot of what you're saying, Jonathan. See, I have a nonprofit organization called the Child's Miracle Mind. It's actually designed to help children find out who they really are through the metaphysical world, using all the ancient techniques and knowledge that we know and have, but aren't being used, to help these kids, you know, develop better, be who they are better, not be on their prescription drugs that they keep putting all these kids on, because I have a hard time with that. And so it's in the process. I've already been approved and everything, so, you know, I'm out there. I'm going to, you know, push it, let people understand that these kids, not that they're anything special, but they do have a lot of special ability that needs to be brought out, you know, or encouraged. And so that's, you know, pretty strong on the list, especially over here, because all the kids over here, not all of them, but a lot of them, are all on Ritalin or something that just, to me, is really messing up their mind and not letting them be who they are. So I have a hard time with all of that. Great. Okay, Jonathan, we have a call. So we're going to take the caller. So, caller, are you there?
Hi. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. Can I have your name, please?
My name's Andrea.
Okay, and Andrea, do you have a question?
Yeah, I do. I'm just wondering, as far as in the next month or so, do you see a job for me in work?
Can I ask, Jonathan, do you help people when they ask questions like that? Or do you want me just
I can do that, but I didn't hear the question, unfortunately.
Okay, she wanted to
know... Can you repeat it, Nancy, the question?
Yes. Her name is Andrea, and she wants to know if she's going to be getting a job within the next few months.
Hi, Andrea.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Good to speak to you. Have you just literally applied for a job?
Actually, I did.
Yeah. Well, I think that you have a good chance of getting that job, but I think that in a period of 1 to 2 months, I feel that you'll have an answer to your employment. I'm not saying the job you've just applied for is the job you will get. I don't feel that, and I can't honestly tell you that. But I feel in the 1 to 2 month timeline, you will have a job that you will be satisfied with for the time being.
Oh, that sounds good.
And, Andrea, I'm going to just add to that a little bit for Jonathan. When I turned over my cards, it was really fun because I come up with a work card. Be a little patient because you're a little uptight about it, so relax, okay? Then you come out with a 3 card, which I read as from now to 3 months, abundance of good things coming your way, a man who's going to be real assertive who wants to hire you, the Chariot, which is have faith you can win to get what you want, so your sadness will turn to happiness again during this 3 month period. And then this is the best one. You come out with the best money card in the deck.
Oh, that's great. I love
so
that.
So all you got to do is stay positive with it, stay patient, and hang in there and just keep going, okay?
Okay. Well, thanks so very much, both of you.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thank you.
Absolute pleasure.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night. It's great sometimes when people call in, and especially when you do something and I turn around and I go, same thing.
I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, it just happens. You know, people call in, and I do like to have calls coming in. I don't take them a lot, but, I like it. I would like for you, Jonathan, to give out your websites again, the name of your book, and your email address.
Sure. Okay, the center web address is www.dubon, which is dubon.org. The book website, where you can read a little bit more about the book, apart from putting it in Google or Yahoo, it will come up in there as well, is www.we-r-all-1.net. And that's the 6- on the computer keyboard. And if you want to email us, you can contact me at Dubon, which is D-U-B-O-N, at NERF, which is 9 in French, N-E-U-F dot F-R for France.
Okay, now,
and we'll be happy to answer any queries or questions you may have. And the book is available on Amazon.com for you in the States, across Amazon, across the world. It's called We Are All One, A Call to Spiritual Uprising.
Now, there's also another website that if somebody wants to go on and read some articles about you.
Is there?
Well, that might be
the blog. Is that the blog spot?
Well, what I have is www.spiritual-experiences.com and then a /, and then it's real, and then a dash, and then spiritual, and then a dash, and then a story .php? Is that what?
Yeah, if you just go to spiritualexperiences.com,
okay.
You can read articles on that. It's a very good website. It has loads of interesting articles, and I have an article on there. I have an article on cosmiclighthouse.com as well, which is www.cosmiclighthouse.com. That's a great metaphysical e-magazine that comes from Singapore. some fantastic information and stuff on there for all types of awareness, and have a couple of articles with them as well. So, yeah, they're just other articles that I have on the web at the moment.
Okay, that's kind of interesting. Now, I'm going to ask a little bit more about yourself, Jonathan, okay? Now, first let's ask, how long, as you say, have you been married with your wife where she's had to put up with you?
I know I'm talking to another woman now, don't I? So, I've got to get this right because she'll be listening. So in 16 years, we've actually been married in spring, and we've been together since college or high school, I suppose you'd call it. So we've been together 26 years. So it's a long time.
A long time. And if you would ask her how she feels about putting up with you, what do you think she'd say?
I think it's not been easy, but I think it's certainly been interesting, you know. It's never been 9 to 5 straight ahead. It's never been absolutely normal, as the world would see it. And that's hard in itself because I've followed that, and Wendy has, you know, lovingly supported me and followed it with me. And when you haven't got something in front of you, as you know, Nancy, it's not always easy to keep the faith, to keep
it's
the understanding
true.
Of following that. But I'm very lucky and blessed that, you know, my wife has followed me with that and understands the truth of it. So I'm very, very lucky. I just think she'd probably think it's been a bit of a crazy ride.
Not boring at all, right? Now, let's go back to your book just a little bit. Now, tell the listeners the name of your book again, please.
Okay, the book's called We Are All One, A Call to Spiritual Uprising.
Okay.
And my author's name is J.M. Harrison, H-A-R-R-I-S-O-N. And that's literally published at the beginning of this year. And I think, you know, we've talked about the dates, and I felt it was important and clearly important to come out in 2008 and start talking on the radio and get the book out there to share that experience and share that awareness. So that's why it's now, really.
Part of your book, you talk about the truth about illness. Can you
mm-hmm.
just... you know, tell us a little bit about the truth about illness so that people can understand why there would be a statement like that made.
Okay. Now, we mustn't, when we talk about this, we have to be careful. It's not a black and white thing, as you know.
Right.
But in one understanding, illness that we bring upon ourselves, I believe, is down to the breakdown of the spirit, mind, body. And you notice I don't say body, mind, spirit.
Right.
Spirit, mind, body. If you are fully functional and a fully aware human being, you will listen to your higher self. You will listen to your spirit. You will listen to your soul. You will find out what you are. Even if that's a split second here and there, it may be a gut feeling. It may be you might just sense it or feel it, or you may even hear something. Accept that for what it is, which is true. Because that is yourself reminding yourself how to keep well. So I think the busyness of the world kind of lets us ignore or makes us ignore the spiritual aspect of consciousness. So we kind of whiz round in our cars and we whiz round in our minds and, you know, we are cutting off a vital part of a necessary part of our being. If we cut that part off, it's a bit like cutting your legs off, you know. You're going to make life difficult for yourself. Life is a lot easier when you look at your identity and understand what you are and allow that to flow through. Allow your spirit to shape your mind rather than your mind decide what your life is. So use your mind intuitively and it will reveal a greater understanding of wellness and well-being.
Okay. Now, I'm going to ask you some other questions, Jonathan, and again, it's up to you if you'd like to answer them. Do you have any predictions that you might like to tell the listeners that can maybe be happening, say, from now to 2012?
Well, I bet you have. I feel you should talk about this, and I feel you've said that. I feel it's brought in for you to say something, actually, at that point. So I'd like you to answer that.
As a child, I was told many, many times over that 2010 is going to be a definite time to pay attention to. That there's going to be a lot of different changes that come on with people themselves, with the world itself, a lot of changing of time, which a lot of people will interpret as a disaster, which doesn't necessarily have to be disaster, but a lot of people from 2010 until probably 2015, 2020, may decide they don't want to be here on Earth. And so there'll be a lot of changes with, you know, people in general, just the knowledge, the conscious mind. And when I was first shown that when I was like 10 years old, which is about 49 years ago, I didn't know what to think of it, okay? I didn't know what to think of it because when you're 10 years old and you're seeing these kind of changes go on and not everything is really pretty, you're wondering, well, you know, what is that? But as a 10-year-old, you're also going, well, that's a long time away yet. I don't have to worry about that. And then all of a sudden you open your eyes and you're at 2008 and you're going, hey, we're talking about 2 years from now. So I was just curious because, you know, I've always seen a lot of changes coming. Not all of them are going to be nice. Not all of them are going to be good. And not everybody's going to want to stay for it. But the changes, if they don't happen, will only end up making the life on this planet much, much harder because we are killing this planet, and we got to find a way to stop doing that. And with progress, they call it progress, I call it deprogress, because we're not helping a lot of the environment, at least until lately. I mean, people have become a little bit more aware, but for most of my growing up, I watched, you know, many things going on, and I thought, this isn't going to be so cool when it finally happens. So that's kind of my take. So do you have another take or agree take? Or
no, I feel very, very similar to that. I just feel that 2008 is that kick-in time where people like yourself and myself and many other people in the world are working to energetically contribute to making that possibility the most positive experience, because everything is not a bed of roses, as you clearly said. I don't want to go into details of what I feel that is, because, you know, it can be an alarming thing if you prophesy bad news. I don't feel that's the most helpful explanation. And everybody in the mindset of understanding good and bad will just see it as bad. But as you quite rightly said, it's about awareness. It's about understanding that these events need to occur, and you can consider them good and bad. That's up to you. But they need to occur in order for us to evolve. And quite rightly, again, you said, if we don't evolve and understand our potential, we will go backwards. Instead of evolve, we will devolve. Instead of becoming positive, we will turn to the negative. And that is the risk that we have in the world today. We, you know, the world is focused on gain and greed. It's not centered on sharing and love and harmony, although there is a huge growing army of people, of spiritual warriors, of light workers who are set to change the world. All I'm just doing is reminding people it's a good time to stand up and do that now. Many, many people are doing it, and many more are going to come. And I just instinctively feel that 2008 is a beating of a drum and calling people to stand up and say to people who are still very in the mindset of not completely understanding, not gaining enough awareness of their spiritual aspect, to call them, to unite them, to let them understand that they can change the world. And I'm not being, again, optimistic or in a dreamlike state. Consciousness and spiritual consciousness is the key to creating a safe, harmonious, loving world where everybody has an equal opportunity. It's not something that's 10,000 years away. It's something that can be reached by all people because of the potential of consciousness. The consciousness that I and many others have experienced reveals that it's a naturally loving, caring consciousness, and it doesn't have to involve money or big houses or very expensive cars. It's a consciousness that is a sacred, loving consciousness.
And I think, you know, people need to get back to that main word that you're talking about, and that's called love. And for some reason, that little four-letter word, people are having the hardest time with, and it's like it's got to come back, because that really is what's going to end up saving us. It's not the greed. It's not who has the most money or the most toys. It doesn't work like that.
Absolutely. Well, that, and you're so right, that consciousness in itself is described as love. It is an unconditional love. It's an all-loving state of consciousness that seeks to relieve the pain and suffering of others. It doesn't understand separation. You know, we are all one is that concept. It's that united unity consciousness that really, in my understanding, is the only possibility of creating substantial change in the world that we desperately need. I mean, who wants to go living in a world, and who wants to leave a world that's been raped and pillaged and distorted by previous generations with war, famine, and poverty? There's no difference between today and 2,000-3,000 years ago in many respects, other than we've got, you know, great bombs that can wipe out whole areas. But there is very little difference. And we are, as a race, have a potential to go a greater distance than that. If we remember, like you said, the word love, the meaning of love, and sharing and helping each other, the empathy of healing, the understanding we can all gain by realizing that we are at one level in our being, united with each other.
And again, I think people are starting to wake up, but it's been a long, long road. If somebody wanted to come to your Healing and Awareness Center in France, do they have to, well, I'm sure they would have to set up a time frame with you, or do you have, like, certain sessions going on that, you know, they would be able to come join? How does that part work?
Okay, well, we do kind of three separate things here, because we're out in the middle of nowhere. We've got a lovely old Armagnac farm in Gascony in France. We're not far from the Pyrenees, so we're right down south. We basically offer, you can just come for a holiday. If you want a holiday in a peaceful environment and maybe just want to chat about things or whatever, you can come and have a holiday. We've got a self-catering cottage on our land that you can come and stay as on your own, as a couple, as a family. So there's a holiday aspect to that as well. Secondly, you could come, for example, on the 28th of April, we have a We Are All One workshop, which is really for people that are already on that journey of understanding. They may already be healers or such like, psychics, mediums themselves. And they want to have a bit of time for themselves and to have a bit of replenishing their batteries and want to learn and deepen their awareness a bit further. So that type of workshop we offer, say we've got one on the 28th of April. People coming from the USA, if they come down to Bordeaux or Biarritz, we'll come and even pick them up from the airport. It's not a problem. And thirdly, we do a thing called tailor-made awareness or personalized retreats, which is basically somebody inquires about coming over and wants to learn more from where they are with their awareness. So we'll discuss what they know and have a good chat and get to know each other. And then we'll do a questionnaire, which basically will just lay out the sort of things that they can do here and what, you know, what they would like to do or not to do, basically. And we'll tailor-make what they would like to achieve, basically, during their stay. And we'll tailor-make that stay for them at no extra cost. It's not a problem. We're actually into helping people. We're not a very, very expensive unit. We don't need to be. I'm very lucky that we don't owe huge amounts of money, so we're very, very lucky. We can afford to do it very reasonably for people. So it kind of is a, although it's a long way from the States, you know, you can come and have a few days holiday and then do a course or whatever. So it's a good possibility, really, from anywhere in the world nowadays.
Great. Jonathan, our time is almost up, so could you give out the name of your book one more time and your main website address where people can look you up and find out all your information?
Okay. Yeah, the book's called We Are All One, A Call to Spiritual Uprising by J.M. Harrison. As I said, that's on Amazon.com. And if you want to look at the center, it's www.dubon.org. And on there, you've got links to the book website as well if you want to know more about the book. Plus, like I said, if you go to Google or Yahoo, if you put in J.M. Harrison, Oneness, or We Are All One, there will be quite a few articles and other interviews and stuff that you can access at home on the Internet.
Great. Jonathan, it has been a really, really great, great pleasure having you on the show. You're very, very interesting. And I'd like to
thank you very much for having me, Nancy. I've been looking forward to this one, and it's been very, very enjoyable, and I'm very lucky to have the chance to speak to you.
Great. You take care of yourself, Jonathan. And for all you listeners, thank you for listening. Thanks for the one call we had. May God bless all of you. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you later. Take care. Bye now.